Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Today I talked to the chairman of the boards, which is to say the chair of the Upper Grand District School Board, Mark Bailey, and the chair of the Wellington Catholic District School Board, Marino Gazzalo. It's almost back to school time for the little kids of Guelph, as well as the big kids at the University of Guelph, and since we've already talked about the latter, it's time we addressed the former. Going behind the scenes of the local school board is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. So way back in 2014, I was busying myself with coverage of the mayoral and city council races, and something snapped me out of the stupor, and I realized that there was another race not getting much love or coverage, and that was the school board races. Sadly, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone, even someone with kids, who makes the school board elections a priority. Take, for example, one of today's guests, Mark Bailey. Almost 2,000 more people voted in the Ward 1 council race as compared to the Ward 1 and 5 school board race, which Bailey won with almost 31% of the votes cast back in 2014. What happens monthly at the school board is definitely deserving of more coverage, which is an uphill climb with the dwindling and or limited resources of modern newsrooms. And that fact will be cast in stark relief again next year, when not only are the school boards up for election again, but that will be preceded by a provincial election in which education will likely be a major issue. Education accounts for the second highest amount of spending in the province of Ontario, and the ones that allocate all that money from the Treasury to your neighborhood school is your local Board of Trustees. So to say that what the school board does has no effect on you if you're someone without kids or have kids that have aged out of a school system is still somewhat disingenuous. So given the time of year, I thought it might be fun and interesting to get a little deeper on what's going on at the school boards as we head into fall and back to school. It's back to school for them too, and for this edition of the podcast, I decided to bring together the chairs of our local Catholic and separated school boards. So on this week's Guelph Politicast, I talked to Mark Bailey and Marino Gazzalo about the similarities and differences between their two school boards, what they've got on their plates for the new school year, what they're anticipating for two important elections in 2018, and the seemingly eternal question about whether or not amalgamation is in the future for the two boards. I have a feeling that might be a bigger election issue than we might be expecting right now, so it's worth hanging in there till the end of the podcast to hear Bailey and Gazzalo's thoughts on that matter. So I caught up with Mark Bailey and Marino Gazzalo last week in studio.
My name is Mark Bailey, and I am currently chair of the Upper Grand District School Board.
I'm Marino Gazzalo, and I'm a trustee and chair of the Wellington Catholic District School Board.
To begin with, could we maybe talk simply about, in terms of the school board and where your kind of jurisdiction is versus what you leave up to the staff of your individual schools, where does board jurisdiction begin and where does, you know, maybe staff jurisdiction end?
Great question, Adam. Governance at the school board is probably one of the most misunderstood aspects around our role. So trustees at the Upper Grand District School Board, we're really responsible for strategic direction, policy, and for the budget. And after that, it's really the jurisdiction of senior administration. So there are 10 trustees at the Upper Grand District School Board, and through an approved board motion, we provide direction to the Director of Education, and from there, it's her responsibility to implement that and for staff to take direction from her.
Okay.
Mark pretty much nailed it. We have six trustees with the Wellington Catholic District School Board. The role of trustees changed dramatically in 2009 when the Ontario government introduced the Governance School Board Act. And basically, it took all the operational powers away from the boards. So we do not get involved in the day-to-day operations of the schools. But as Mark said, we are the policymakers. We ensure the policy is followed, the strategic plan, and the major factor is the budget.
Mm-hmm. So it's not I think a lot of people listening probably have served on boards, not necessarily school boards, but, you know, boards of nonprofits and other things. And that does seem to be the distinction that the staff execute day-to-day operations. The board looks after the big picture. So having said that, is there, you know, you're both chairs of different school boards, but is there any overlap? Is there any times where your board, Marino, and your board, Mark, have to, you know, maybe team up, or, you know, maybe you're a check on each other? If one of you is dealing with one kind, like an issue in terms of a new policy or something, maybe the other has already dealt with it. Is there anything like that?
We've always had a very good relationship with the Upper Grand Board, and we're very collaborative with them. And if there are similar issues going on, we will talk back and forth. But we also are involved in many shared services. We're both involved in the same transportation consortium, in the same purchasing consortium. So there's a lot of backroom sharing that happens that, you know, many of the taxpayers would not see. But the cooperation and collaboration of our boards has always been great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the only thing that I would add to that, I know that both of our directors of education get along very well and, in fact, consult with each other quite often. And I know through provincial work that I've done, that's not always the case in many, many boards. And I think and it's not even regular. Every few years, our two boards get together to renew our economic development charge policy. It's a joint policy.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, our two boards pretty much in my memory don't get together, but certainly through the transportation consortium and the purchasing consortium, there is, as Marino mentioned, quite a bit of collaboration.
Mm-hmm. But you kind of implied it's not always the case that there are maybe rough patches, and not necessarily in Guelph, but in other area boards where the Catholic and separate boards don't maybe get along as well.
Mark and I have both been involved provincially with provincial associations, and that's very true. There's different areas of the province where the boards, the coterminous boards, you know, whether they have different views or not, that's one thing aside. But it's very imperative, I think, that the boards collaborate on many topics or as many subjects as possible. We're dealing with the same geographical area mostly. Mm-hmm. The Upper Grand also has part of the Dufferin County, which we don't. We strictly have Wellington. But many of the issues that come up will affect both boards.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me pivot then to looking at something, you know, you will both have in common, is that next year is an election year, and it's going to be a very busy year because on the one hand, you're going to have the provincial election. I imagine there's going to be some kind of advocacy role for you on that part in terms of testing the parties and seeing where their education priorities lie. And then both boards are up for election in the fall. Is this going to be like a really hectic year for you guys coming up, or is this, you know?
Education is the second largest expenditure in the province of Ontario behind health. So education is always an issue when you're talking about a provincial election in the province of Ontario. And certainly when I was involved provincially, and the provincial association still do, they meet with all the party leaders. They have lobby days to gauge the interest, to gauge the support mm-hmm. for the education, you know, amongst the different political parties. And certainly locally, we'll meet with the candidates. As trustees, we don't necessarily get involved in a political advocacy role, but
right.
we certainly do meet with the candidates. We want to know what they're about and what their platforms are.
Right. But there is part of it that is undoubtedly political. I mean, even if you don't say it out loud, you understand your board. You're trying to get them to understand your board and your needs. So, you know, maybe where is that fine line in your experience, Mark?
Well, I mean, certainly everything Marino has said resonates with my experience as well. There tends to be a lot of respect. The role of the trustee has changed dramatically over the past two decades. And so where there is advocacy, it's not advocacy in terms of lobbying for a specific political party.
Mm-hmm.
It's just making sure that, as Marino says, education is A, such a big budget item, and B, such an important part of developing our future capacity for skilled workers. And as such, we just want to make sure that that remains a key election discussion for voters.
Mm-hmm.
a key point for me has always been that trustees of a school board are the absolute grassroots of politics in the province of Ontario and everywhere. I mean, basically, it starts with us and goes from there. We have the responsibility of educating the young people of our province and ensuring that they grow up into responsible citizens who are going to be the leaders of the community in the future.
Mm-hmm. And you may not want to get too deep into the politics of it, but this has been a pretty difficult last couple of years with the provincial government too, that, you know, not necessarily saying it's anyone's fault, but, you know, there was a real difficult negotiation between the teachers and the province this past term.
There's no denying that, but at the same time, in the end, it worked out. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody that goes into negotiations, whether it's local or provincial, they go in with the idea of coming out with a deal that everybody can consider a win-win deal. Ultimately, it has to be the best for the students. The bottom line is, whatever we do, whatever we decide, has to be the best for the students of this province. Mm-hmm. And I think Mark will obviously agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And at our board, we have a saying that during negotiations, we're always keeping our eye on the day after.
Right.
So knowing that whether you want to see negotiations as a dance or as a wrestling match, cause it kind of wavers between the two. At the end of the day, we want to be standing shoulder to shoulder with our educators because, as Marino says, we share a very important common goal.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to come out of that provincial election, and I think it's going to be more or less overlapping in terms of, you know, deciding, you know, people who are going to be running for school board, not just school board, but city council as well. But because we're talking about the school board, and then, you know, we're going into summer, and then we're into the fall election season. I won't ask if you're running for re-election yet, but in terms of, you know, what does that look like in terms of being on the board, running for election at the same time, it being the beginning of the school year, is that going to be, is that ever tough? Does that ever, you know, threaten to overload the system and, you know, and eating up all your time?
The provincial election will be in June next year, and our municipal election is at the end of October.
Right.
I've got 27 years on now as a trustee. I do this because I love it, because I believe in it. Mark, and we'll all say, we don't do this to get rich, because the honorariums of trustees, you know, after you've got your one-third that's non-taxable, but let's face it, you don't get rich on it. We do it because education is important to us, because the students are important to us. And in my feeling, I'm doing something that's going to affect the future, and it's something I strongly believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just to your question around what it's like to both be a trustee and run for re-election, certainly there is a sense that you do have to wear two different hats, and you never want to be seen, and you don't want to, for ethical reasons, take advantage of the fact that you are an incumbent and you have that additional access to schools, for example, that you wouldn't have as a candidate. So certainly there is a balancing act there. In my experience, the candidates both at Wellington Catholic and in Upper Grand are very respectful of those two divisions.
I think one thing to remember, as school board trustees, we're nonpartisan.
Right. As in, you run non-affiliated with
Absolutely.
Any party, like city council does. I do actually want to address and this came up with me in the last election, and a lot of people who, you know, maybe don't, I don't want to say appreciate, but there is concern that, you know, the school board races don't get as much attention as the city council races. And you know, you, Marino, just said, you know, we're talking about the grassroots, like the literal grassroots in terms of, you know, how children are educated and raised. And you know, is first of all, do you guys feel that frustration? And then second of all, maybe how do we address that? Because it does feel like the school board race is always the forgotten race. And, you know, I did my part. Not to, you know, pat myself on the back too hard, but I tried to do my part last time around. But it does feel like we do not give this as much attention as we should.
Well, Adam, I think you do deserve a pat on the back. I think I have run in three different elections, and I believe all three you have emailed me with a list of questions and posted those answers to your website. So, and you're unfortunately a little bit unique. Now, I mean, the papers do ask us a list of questions, and those get published. But in terms of public debate, I remember the first time I ran, there was a public debate. It wasn't well attended, and there hasn't been a public debate for trustees since then. So to be candid, yes, there is a little bit of frustration. Obviously, both Marino and I do this out of the passion that we have for student success and well-being. And when election time comes around, there is a little bit of frustration that the discussion isn't around that, or at least some discussion. The efficiencies that are created by having all three levels, mayor, council, and trustee, voted for at the same time, there's certainly some efficiencies there. And we know that sometimes if there are elections for trustee, that there tends to be a low turnout. So I mean, apart from continuing to advocate through social media and through the conventional, traditional media where we can, it can be frustrating, but it's just you gotta keep up that effort with the passion that you have for the topic at hand, namely student success and well-being.
Unfortunately, too unique is going to be my new tagline for the site.
Well, I think in people's minds, the school boards obviously are the lowest turnout when it comes to voter turnout. But in people's mind, we're not, if you want to put it in quotations, the obvious politician.
Right.
You know, the mayor stands out. The provincial politicians get all kinds of press. The federal politicians are always in the news. We're not. We're very grassroots, very bottom level. And it doesn't seem to resonate with the voter out there, when in fact it should be one of the most important ones, as education is so important to society in general.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we start with the youngsters that are 4 years old that become our responsibility. And I think, if anything, it should be the opposite of what it is, but unfortunately it isn't.
And there's the refrain of it is, though, I don't have kids, so why should I care? And I imagine there's an answer to that.
Well, there is, because they still pay taxes, and
right.
A portion of their taxes are educational taxes. So whether they have children in the system or not should not be a factor in any way.
Right.
The social and economic fabric of our society are directly based upon our education system. So whether you have children in the system or not, the level of student success and well-being and the success of the education system directly affect everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the present. We're recording near the end of August, and I know that school is on the mind of many, including maybe especially retailers. There's a... looking forward to the school year, I when I was researching for the interview today, I noticed there was an article about how the Upper Grand was hiring teachers for this coming year, which I gathered was a bit of an unusual situation. In terms of that staffing, in terms of, you know, the hiring of new teachers, expanding, you know, the teaching capacity of the boards. I know there's also issues of French immersion, which I do want to get into in a minute, but why was Upper Grand hiring new teachers this year? Why was that so unusual?
Well, the context is declining enrollment. So over the past several years, indeed, I believe since I became a trustee, our board has lost a few students every year. Mm-hmm. So that's... That has become our new norm, and so it's been very, very difficult for newly trained teachers to find a position in our system, with the exception of French immersion and, to a lesser extent, special education.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we found ourselves needing to hire teachers this year, there are certain factors. We're currently experiencing a little bit of a development boom. For example, the Syrian refugees. We're increasing the number of international students. That's really been a recruitment effort. But in the context of declining enrollment, it was unusual for us this year, absolutely.
Where are the students going? Is it just attrition, or...?
I think part of it is just society in general. The days of a family having four or five children are long gone.
Right.
So as you see the larger cohorts in the high schools exiting high school in grade 12 and the year after, the younger cohorts coming into full-day kindergarten are now not as big as they were. So as those cohorts go through the system, you see your numbers declining. You know, the day, well, there were four in my family, and but that just isn't it. You know, families now, two kids, maybe three, and those are the kids that are coming into the system now. And that's why your numbers are down.
Interesting.
And families having children later in life.
Right. Interesting. Well, let's touch on the French immersion issue, because that seems to come up, you know, every June, that more and more students want to get that, you know, or more parents want their kids to get that French immersion education, and supply is not meeting demand. What is, you know, I'm sure you've both studied this at your boards. So where's the disconnect?
At our board, we did have a discussion on it, and we decided not to go in that direction at this time. We're focusing on some other programs, the baccalaureate program that we've introduced. So we've just made the decision to go in that direction right now, and French immersion is not on our radar at this point.
Yeah, for our board, French immersion, we introduced it, I believe, over 40 years ago. And in some ways, it's become a victim of its own success. A growing number of parents are convinced that a second language will assist their children either in their learning itself or in finding a job that might require a second language, for example, a government position.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we just have an increasing demand for French-speaking, more than French-speaking, but French-speaking and trained teachers. And as a result, we've certainly had to focus on recruitment strategies, because it's not like the regular track where we'll have an abundance of candidates and be able to choose the best of the best. For French immersion, we're going out there and actively recruiting.
It seems in particular that there are some teaching positions where it's sort of easier to find a place than others, and French immersion is one of those. But I know from my own personal anecdotal experience, my sister is a teacher, and she's a music teacher, and it was easier for her to find a permanent place versus some of her other colleagues, because there is a more of a need for music teachers than there is maybe, say, English or math teachers. Is that a common thing in the Guelph boards?
I don't know if it's common, but certainly the specialty areas, whether it's math, science, French, or music, those are the areas that the teachers have specialties in. And certainly, you know, when those are needed, there seems to be more availability for that. There's 8,000 students coming out of the Faculty of Teaching in Ontario, you know, almost every year. And now that they've gone to a two-year program at the teachers' colleges, it makes it even more difficult for these young people coming out to get a job.
Wow. That's because, yeah, there's not 8,000 jobs a year open. That's an incredible number. Talk about supply and demand. What other challenges are you guys going to be tackling this year on the board level? You know, we've talked about elections, but I mean, I'm sure there's things on your plates that has nothing to do with the politics and just in terms of just the management, the long-term management of the school systems.
Well, sure. I know one kind of critical issue that we're dealing with right now, and they weren't involved directly in provincial negotiations, but our senior administration salaries have been frozen, I believe, since 2012. And so right now we're in discussion with the provincial government over what to do about that. And so I think that is probably our greatest foreseeable challenge over the coming months, is resolving that issue.
Mark's right on that. Every other group involved in education has been dealt with by the government, and the senior administration have been left out. And right now, the executive compensation is certainly on the table. And Mark says 2012. I think it's even longer than that the senior executives have not been dealt with. So that's an issue. But budget is always an overall issue for any school board, especially transportation and special education. Those are two areas that, in my view, are not funded properly by the government. They're underfunded. Special education such a huge, huge component in the system now. And more youngsters are being identified as having special needs and right. individual education programs. And that funding just isn't keeping up with the needs of the students.
You're talking about maybe kids on the autism spectrum that need a bit of extra
That's
help.
That's one area, but there's certainly a lot more areas of special needs.
Wow. To go a bit deeper into that, what's the shortfall? Yeah, I realize you probably don't know the exact numbers on top of your head, but it, you know, in terms of what kind of increase is needed?
Well, many of the special needs children have requirements where you have to bring in either paraprofessionals or they have to be identified, or there's certain diagnostic testing that needs to go on to identify these young kids. And the funding just doesn't cover all the specific areas. It'll cover the basic educational needs right. and some special needs, but it doesn't cover the overall need that these young people have.
So once they're identified, the money is there to help with their education. But what's lacking is how trying to find out how to best help individual students.
Right.
Interesting. Any sign from the government that there might be more help coming in this regard? Or is this one of these areas where every time you meet with like a provincial provincial person, you have to remind them, hey, by the way, there's this issue going on?
Well, I think, I mean, it's the balancing act between provincial politics and school board politics. And as Marino has said quite rightfully, we're grassroots. We're here to advocate for our students, and we want the best possible for outcome for all of our students. And special needs can require an exceptional amount of attention above and beyond, you know, our regular students. And as such, it's a matter of continuing special needs advocacy. And I know for both the Catholic Provincial Association and also the Ontario Public Association, special needs is always front and center in terms of the advocacy work that we do. But it comes up against the cold, hard politics of budget making.
Right. I wanted to save this topic to last because either it's going to sort of develop a good discussion or it's going to be frozen dead in its tracks. But, I you know, with the provincial election coming up, and it seems to be being talked about more and more, is amalgamating the boards. So my first question is, do you think there's still a place for having a Catholic and a separate school board as two distinct boards? And then maybe to follow that up, would you completely shut the door on combining the two boards?
I think to start off, first of all, I mean, as well as being a local trustee, I was the past president of the Ontario Catholic School Trustees Association and the current president of the Canadian Catholic School Trustees Association. So this discussion comes up quite often. And more often when there's an election pending in the future, as close as it is. The topic always seems to be that there's a huge savings to be had if you amalgamate the two systems, and that's simply not true. Funding for education in Ontario is done on a per pupil basis, about 11,500. You've got over 1.9 million students. If you amalgamate, you're still going to have 1.9 million students, and you're still going to fund them at 11,500 per student. Mm-hmm. What it is going to do is caused some chaos. First of all, every school is going to be involved. If a student is now going to the Catholic school and you amalgamate the system, he's now going to go to the school that's closest to his house,
right.
which may be a public school, and you may displace one of the students from that school to have to go somewhere else. Mm. I don't think any parent's going to step forward and say, go ahead, move my kids.
You're not wrong, because you do see that when it comes up in the news about having to close down a school right. to renovate or whatever. And that seems to rub people the wrong way every time.
The other point, if I can make it, in 1997, the province of Ontario went from 125 school boards to 72 boards. They did a huge amalgamation. The infrastructure to oversee that amalgamation cost over $1.1 billion, and the savings have not been had since that time. There is definitely a place for the system. Ontario is looked at as having one of the best educational systems in the world. The reason for that is the four distinct components. You have the English public, the Catholic, or the English Catholic, English public, French public, and French Catholic. Together, those four systems create an educational system that is envied by many. Why would you break up a system that's working so well?
Mm-hmm. So no way, no how.
No way, no how.
Mark, I dare you to be the devil's advocate.
Well, you know, for me, quite honestly, it is a double-edged sword. There would be a considerable amount of disruption. You could also make the argument, and I believe that Marina was going in this direction, you could make the argument that by having four systems, it keeps each system a little more on edge. You can't rest knowing that there is another, you know, organization who, let's be honest, is competing for market share, if you want to put it in that language.
Competition breeds success.
Competition breeds success, exactly. And I would say, and Marino may not agree with me completely on this, I'd say in an area like Guelph, I would imagine that there wouldn't be very much savings to be had, and if so, the savings would take a long time. There may be certain boards where rural boards that do not have a population density, where it may make a little more financial sense to have that. But whether that's an amalgamation or whether we can find another avenue of cooperation through shared resources, for example, Marino mentioned earlier the transportation consortium and the purchasing consortium, we're finding ways to work together despite being different organizations. Mm-hmm. And so whether I guess the question for me is what kind of disruption and what kind of actual savings would be gleaned through an actual amalgamation versus trying to find ways through cooperation to increase efficiencies, for example, so that rural students wouldn't have to travel as long, or that boards would have to maintain, you know, two half empty schools, for example. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very complicated question. There is no set answer. My own personal opinion is enhanced cooperation.
Currently, if I can, none of the three major political parties in Ontario have indicated that they're willing to take the issue on.
Right.
We regularly meet with all of them, and as of now, they're all showing very much support for the status quo.
I was going to ask that because there was kind of one voice for it in the last election, which was the Green Party.
Green Party.
But I have noticed in the last several months, certainly from the press side of it, there's been more coverage, there's been more discussion. So I did want to ask you, considering you're kind of have an eye on what's happening province wide, is that maybe an accurate view? Is that, you know, maybe the call is getting a bit louder, at least loud enough for you to have to answer it? Or is this just still maybe a fringe?
Well, I wouldn't call it a fringe. Certainly, it's a serious issue, but it always seems to be coming from the same direction. Mm. Mr. Buchanan certainly is out there, and he's very regular a spokesperson of one system. But I think in general, I think the support is out there to maintain the status quo. It doesn't seem to be as widespread as some people indicate it is.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that might change one day?
I certainly hope not.
Fair answer. Maybe going into just, you know, anything you're looking forward to this year, just, you know, anything going on in your own backyards and your own boards that, you know, that maybe this year is going to be a little bit different, anything you've got in the works?
Well, you know, I think back to school is just as significant for trustees for two reasons. One, you know, we feel like our system is back in full operation.
Right.
And there's also the component as you experience with your classmates, your fellow trustees that you haven't seen regularly for the past couple months. You get together and there's that special feeling that, you know, class is back in session, so to speak. And so September's always a very special time of year. We're having our very first board meeting of the school year next week, actually. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just that that sense of excitement that, okay, we're back in business. What's this next year going to bring in terms of new opportunities to find ways to enhance student success and well-being, and how can we get along as the most effective team as possible to explore, weigh those options, and ultimately choose the ones that we think are most effective.
Marina, are you looking forward to seeing your friends again?
Oh, absolutely. We have a great board. We introduced a new program last year, which was Wi-Fi on three buses that leave St. James going to the county, giving students an opportunity to actually do some work on the bus. They've got an hour and 20-minute ride home. And it seemed to be very, very positive, and we're looking to expand that, hopefully. Also this year, we're introducing the International Baccalaureate program in the primary grades, and that'll be at Sacred Heart School. So that's very exciting for us. A couple other things. August 31st, we're hosting the first ever Student Athlete Leadership Summit. We have approximately between 50 and 100 student athletes coming with some guest speakers. And as well, there's new programs being initiated in our schools, math, coding, and a couple other programs. So we're looking forward to a really, really exciting year. And as Mark said, certainly we want to get back to work. You know, the boards have a lot to do, a lot of responsibility, and it's going to be another great school year.
Well, here's to a great school year. And Marino Gazzalo and Mark Bailey, thank you so much for coming in and talking about school boards with me.
Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, thank you, Adam, for taking the time and obviously spending some valuable attention on not just public education, but on the perspectives of both boards. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. And once again, that was Mark Bailey of the Upper Grand District School Board and Marino Gazzalo of the Wellington Catholic District School Board. You can learn more about the Upper Grand at its website, ugdsb.on.ca, and then visit the Wellington Catholic District School Board at wellingtoncdsb.ca. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. There is also the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.